We're moving.
Welcome back to the Space Case Sarah Show. We are playing a trivia game this week. We just had an awesome first segment hosted by Kavi giving us some like mind-blowing astrophysics facts. So now we are going to start this second segment with moi, with some astrobiology trivia. And are you gentlemen ready?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm ready.
And astrobiology is my jamalama. I actually found this book in my pile here, and I just want to point this out really quick. I found this book. Someone gifted it to me. I never looked at when it was written. So it says, are there life on other worlds? Are we the only inhabited planet? This was published in 1949.
Wow.
Like, so the question of, are we alone? Yeah, right? I know. It even
black and white, maybe.
It's got that, like, that smell to it, too.
I love the old book smell.
Okay. So the basically astrobiology is the question of, are we alone and how would we detect life somewhere else? That's basically what it is.
Yes. Oh, sorry.
Yes.
You haven't stopped.
Okay. So as of the 1st of January, 2023, and this is a multiple choice question, how many exoplanets have been discovered? Is
5,000.
It 4,367, 5,297, or 6,490?
B. 5,001.
Oh, my gut was on A, but they're all very similar numbers.
They are.
Can I guess one less than Benjamin?
Benjamin is right. It is 5,297 planets.
Wow.
Which,
Dan Kepler.
Right. And of those, do you guys know how many they actually consider? So NASA astrobiology doesn't like this term, but I'm going to use it anyways. How many of them are considered Goldilocks planets, meaning like they are in the prime spot for maybe harboring life? Do you know how many? I'm just throwing that.
I'm going to go for, is there multiple choice coming for this?
No, you know what? I just remember the number.
420.
So. I want 420. I want to say half of them.
No, it's actually a super slim number. It's 32.
Oh, so Kavi won with the 420.
Nice. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So the
I was going to guess 42. I should have gone with that.
Perfectly little sweet spot away from its star, considering what the star is. So as Kavi mentioned, apparently stars can run super duper duper cold. That distance between the star and its respective heat-giving properties is called the Goldilocks zone, and there are very, very, very few that we have found so far that are in the Goldilocks zone. That does not mean that it's Earth-like or that it has, you know, water or things that could support life as we know
it. Means that liquid water could exist. Is that right?
I don't even think it's liquid water could exist. It's just that it's... Oh, yes, you're right. Liquid water could exist from where it's at in position to its star. Yeah.
Right. Which means that can make porridge, hence Goldilocks.
Gotcha. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I guess they don't like Goldilocks zone, though, because we have discovered so many other places that have potentially liquid water that are further away from the said Goldilocks zone. They don't like to kind of pigeonhole that idea that, like, this is the only place life could exist. Mm. So they are moving away from that term, but I'm just using that because I don't know really what else to what else to say it as. All right, next question. When was the first exoplanet discovered? Do you want multiple choice or do you want to just guess?
I think I have a guess.
I have a guess, but I wouldn't mind hearing the options.
Okay. 1992, 1995, or 1997?
Oh my gosh.
I was going to say 1980 something, so I think I would
the first two were my gut guesses, and it would have been much cooler if I could guess rather than having two close options that are so close together. I'm going to go with
95.
I was going to say 95. Yeah. 95.
And like it is actually 97. Ah! Oh no, I'm sorry. Hold on, let me double check.
Burr. I demand a recount.
Yeah.
Hold on. I'm second guessing myself now. I will Google it again. I should have like, when was the, I have a Google right there. 92. I'm sorry. It was the first one, not 97. It was 92.
I
know. I always think 95, and that's why my head went to 97. 92. But think about that. We had no idea there were other planets until 1992.
My gosh.
Well, we had the idea, but we had no proof.
Well, yeah, apparently in 1949, somebody wrote a book about this. Like, yeah, it's just, you know, well, it's like so many things in space and space science. Like, even the premise of, are we alone in the universe? Numbers are just compelling that there's just no way, right? By the math, there's just no way. There's just no way. But that's the same thing with finding other planets. We assumed there were probably other ones, but, and Kavi, you can probably explain it better than I can, but basically the reason that we were able to start discovering them is that we had to change the parameters of what to look for, because you look for them by basically watching them pass in front of their star, and you can see the shadowing of that star. But some of these are orbiting their star so fast, we didn't even see them, because we never would have assumed that they were orbiting that quickly. And that's how they started discovering them.
Yeah, I mean, the transit method, which is what you're describing, and like seeing these faint dips in the light, was something that we actually developed like even a little bit later, I think. I think it wasn't until 2002 that we were actually able to detect an exoplanet with that. Before that, it was these other kind of weird timing effects that you could use, like pulsar timing was the first one, and radial velocity was the second one, I think, in 95 or 97, something like that. The second one, which would have been my correct answer. but yeah, it's wild that it took us so long. It's honestly mind-blowing.
It is. It really is. I mean, when you think about the things, especially during sort of like the Golden Age and, you know, the Enlightenment periods and the Renaissance and sort of like that, things like the jumps of understanding our natural world that we took in those times, it does kind of seem like, wow, that took us a bit to figure out. But hey, now we're up to, 5,297 as of the beginning of this year. So, yeah, I would expect, based on those numbers, you know, give it 10 more years and gosh, who even knows how many we'll have.
It's going to be like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Just have too many. I think honestly, like with the way that telescopes are improving in their ability, we should expect that like we'll be getting that many each year in a couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah, especially with the one they're building in Chile, right? There's a big one. There's a really big one getting built in.
China just finished their massive one, the FAST.
Oh.
Radio telescope.
A big radio one, yeah. Which
made Arecibo look like Bupkis.
Yes, I have seen pictures of that
FAST,
one.
FAST has been running for a while, though. No?
It started, what, a year ago? A year and a half ago? It's relatively new, but it's a beauty. That's the biggest one we got, I think, as far as radio telescopes go.
Well, technically, yes. Sorry, we can talk about radio telescopes later. But
can we do a radio telescopes episode? All right, now next.
We can do five.
We are a radio station, so it would be aprioso. Okay. You guys, so I tried, Benjamin said make these easy, so I wasn't trying to like dupe you guys. What was the field of astrobiology originally called? There was a name for it before astrobiology.
Astrobiology?
Mm-mm. Exobiology?
Yes. Well done, yes, Robbie. It was exobiology.
Look at the snap. I wish I could snap.
I don't know. Exobiology. It was actually quite the fringe science for quite a long time. It wasn't until basically like the generation of Carl Sagan science communicators that really brought it forward to like, hey, this question of are we alone? What are you guys doing? Should be taken with more scientific research, you know, significance, instead of this being this like, are there aliens? You know, And so, but before, actually, it wasn't even, it was even after Carl that it eventually got called astrobiology. Prior to that, it was exobiology. Yes. And so speaking of
Star Trek.
Oh, well, look at you. Speaking of Carl.
Carl.
And I'm sure you guys know this one. But what were the results of the Viking lander experiments on Mars? This is kind of like a trick.
They found no Vikings.
It was inconclusive.
It was, yes.
They had a thing, and they scooped up some Martian soil, and they added some liquid soup to it, and supposedly it gave off some sort of a gas that you would expect to get from a creature that digested something and then released gases from that. But there wasn't enough to say that there were actual microbes digesting things. It could have just been a natural reaction.
From the chemicals, yes. Yeah, just a chemical reaction. Yeah. They were inconclusive. I mean, most people would say it is negative at this point.
Yeah, it's negative.
There still are some that hold on to the, it could have been positive, but it was basically like, you know, really, I have to kind of say, you designed a test with three experiments. And one was like, yes, one was no, and the other one was like, I don't know. Like, what?
That's called 50-50.
Is that 50-50? That's like,
no,
that's a big setup for a failure there. But it was, you know, it's sort of like the detecting phosphine in the cloud decks of Venus. It's interesting enough to follow up on. Oh boy, Javi, do you have words on phosphine in the cloud decks of Venus? I would love to hear them.
I have qualms.
You have qualms. Oh gosh. Qualms. For those of you who are unaware, this was one of the most exciting things that came out for astrobiology research. There was a team out of Britain who determined that they had picked up some evidence of phosphine in the cloud decks of Venus, which, as we know on Earth, can only be produced by biological organisms. But yes, it's been like hotly contested now. So what are the qualms?
As hot as the atmosphere of Venus. I think what the main contention or issue that people had with it at the time was that it was a very, how can I put this? It was kind of a low significance result, basically, in science. When you model things, you create a model that has a number of parameters and you try to fit that model to the results that you see. And the more parameters that you introduce into your model, the more you can kind of, the more malleable it can be and the more it can be manipulated to suit different outcomes. And so the issue was is that it was quite a large number of parameters used in the fit to the spectroscopic data that was used to make that phosphine measurement. And so it's kind of like it's like one of those paintings where if you look at it from just the right angle, you can kind of see something in it, but it's not really. Listen, at the end of the day,
it's not a smoking gun. I got it.
It's not a smoking gun. And I think the issue is that most people in the astronomical community are very we very much want these things to be true, but we want them to be, demonstrated in a way that's really clear. So like, let's not get all excited about something that might not necessarily be the thing. Rather that's, you know, let's work on, as you said, it's worth following up on. Let's follow up on it. Let's not, count our phosphine eggs before they hatch. Chickens.
I have one last one, then we're going to take a break. I know you have a time crunch going on here, so sorry, we're kind of going over. What celestial body likely has under its surface a water composition similar to the Dead Sea? Is it Enceladus, Pluto, yes, or Mars?
No.
Yes, yes. So you're saying Enceladus?
I'm saying Enceladus. But why are we
discounting Europa? I actually learned today it's Pluto.
Really?
Really?
Data has suggested that there is an underwater ocean on Pluto that has a similar composition to the Dead Sea.
That is
I did not know that.
Writing down some new stuff.
I know. I learned that today. I can't remember exactly what the like the instrumentation was that, you know, took that information, but it was like five surprising facts about astrobiology, and that was one of the things, and it's really recent too. So I'm like, huh, well, there you go.
And so Enceladus is also meant to have a liquid ocean under its icy surface, right?
Yes.
Yes. Yep.
But not with, okay, but not
I don't think, I think it's not as salty dense as like the Dead Sea. I think that they actually think it's more life supportive. Like the Dead Sea is, it's pretty hard for life to exist there. Yeah, it's not dead. There's still
for humans to exist there. Like from experience, don't get that stuff in your mouth.
No,
just don't. Ugh.
So, yeah, Enceladus is super interesting and exciting, obviously for astrobiology. Which the Clipper
mission is so interesting.
I know. All right, we're gonna take a break. Go Pluto. And when we get back, Benjamin will take the reign, and we will learn something, I'm sure, again in our next segment. Rocket, so you are listening to the Space Case Sarah Show here on IROC Space Radio.